Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to squarespace.com and enter offer code AboutAndroid at checkout to get 10% off. And by LegalZoom, get your life organized and protect your family with a will or living trust. Plus, incorporate your business or form an LLC. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code AAA to receive $10 off at checkout. And by HipChat, collaborate, save time, be more productive with your teams. HipChat is IM, video chat, plus file, code, and screen sharing all in one place. Invite your team members and get a free 30-day trial of the full version of HipChat at HipChat.com/AllAboutAndroid. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 201, recorded on Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. We're your weekly source of the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason L.
I'm Ron Richards.
Yes, and welcoming back to the table, we have Miriam Jouar, Tank Girl.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How's everybody?
Yeah, we're doing not too shabby. We should mention right off the top of the show that you're going to be on a more regular basis. We have you basically coming on a couple of times a month.
Exactly. Every other week.
Every other week, but you know, schedules are kind of all over the place.
Right, like... Mobile Congress is coming up, so 2 weeks from now I won't be able to be here, so we're looking at maybe next week. Yep. Anyway, we'll figure it out, right?
Yeah, so a couple of times a month.
I'm going to be here more regularly, which is exciting.
Right on.
Exciting.
Well, you're also doing a lot of device reviews on Before You Buy.
Yes, and you guys should stay tuned for tomorrow's Before You Buy show.
I think so.
It was recorded today. We couldn't do live. Well, you'll see.
For reasons it couldn't be done live, but you will see tomorrow.
You will see
some
tomorrow.
Amazing awesomeness that you couldn't see today.
But there'll be amazing awesomeness today, too.
Yes.
I brought some cool toys for you today.
Awesome.
Full of teases. We got tease for tomorrow, tease for later in the show.
So now you have to see glue too.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. Exactly. They're going to continue playing this podcast, I have a feeling. We are also excited to welcome back to the show. It's been a while, Russell Holly. This time not with Geek. You're now a contributing editor at Android Central. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome because, you know, kind of a fan of Android Central. I was a fan of Geek as well, but this is awesome. How long have you been with Android Central now?
Since January 1st, I started doing stuff over there. Wanted to kind of refocus back on Android stuff.
Right on. Yeah, because with Geek, you were covering a lot of ground. You were doing
everything. Yeah.
Geek is all-encompassing, kind of. It's a big umbrella of things to cover.
Something I learned in the past week is that when you're a writer, this is just something I've never considered, but it makes perfect sense. When you're a writer, you want a beat because a beat gives you focus. And I have to imagine as a writer having everything, God, that's got to be so challenging.
It's so hard convincing my kids that video games are work. You know, an Xbox game is coming out next week, and so I've got to get through 30 hours of gameplay so that I can get this review done. And my kids are like, "Yeah, Dad, you're not working. You're playing a game."
Yeah, it's tough. Like, you know, when you're writing, to have a beat is nice. Mm-hmm. And I love electronic music, but I really got into it as a writer. You just kind of gotta get in the zone and just write away. And time just flies.
Cool stuff. Well, congratulations on the move, Russell. That was very cool. We're super stoked to get you back on the show today. We have a couple of your articles actually in the rundown today. We have a discussion. We can talk a little bit about Android security. Had a pretty awesome interview with somebody who knows their stuff at Google about Android security. We'll talk about that. How successful is Android Wear? Everybody's been talking about this all week. Xiaomi coming to the U.S., although maybe not in a way that you might expect. The triumphant return of the ViewMaster.
Very excited.
A look at the Huawei Honor 6 Plus.
Yes.
We'll take a look at that. Miriam brought that device and a whole lot more. But first, as we usually do, let's take a look at some news.
This just in, Brian got a 3DS and
didn't come up with anything for Android News.
Because he's just over there playing it while he's switching the show.
The news from the past is getting very specific about Brian in the future. It's really interesting.
Very strange how that happens.
I know. Just, yeah, kind of odd.
Future tellers.
Well, some actual news from present day is that the Android One developments continue as Android One continues to bring its low-cost Android devices to new parts of the world, adding the Philippines as the sixth country to join the program. The retail cost is 5,000 Philippine pesos. That's about $115 US. And what's interesting is that it is confirmed also as running Lollipop 5.1, although we still have no clue what that means. And thankfully, Russell is here, and he wrote a great article.
to confirm with us that we still have no idea.
So, Russell, what do we got on Android 5.1? If I was in the Philippines right now and I paid 115 US dollars or 5,000 Philippine pesos, what would I get on my phone?
I have absolutely no idea. So, you know, it says 5.1 in the... you know, in the settings field, you know, you can take a look and see that it's there, but it's still, you know, Android 5.0. There's not a lot in the way of tangible differences. There's a lot of speculation as to bug fixes and stuff like that. But until, you know, Google makes an announcement or we see a change log or, you know, one of us actually gets our hands on one of these newer Android One devices, we have no way of knowing.
I mean, and it's interesting to see that. I mean, now it's in six countries, and I assume it's out. So, like, I'm surprised somebody hasn't grabbed one and fed it to someone of notable blog who could confirm
blog
this.
Notoriety. Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it makes sense that enough time has passed with Android 5.0 that maybe a point release is about time. And if these are new devices they're putting out, better to have them come with the latest version of the operating system than have to deal with an over the air update, especially in, you know, international countries and, you know, with that.
And maybe infrastructure would be more difficult to possibly receive
exactly.
that for whatever reason that yeah. might be. We should get on this. I mean, it's like $100 entry point for one of these.
I mean, we have to have somebody watching in the Philippines, right? Just yeah. go get a phone. I don't know how much.
It's only $115.
It's says, like 2 years of salary or something.
I know, right?
I don't know what the going rate is. But, it's like, but you'd think that in six countries now, it would have emerged at some point. But
yeah.
either way, we're on the edge of our seats waiting to see when 5.1 gets confirmed and what is included.
Seeing what minor changes come to Android.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Really want to follow the...
Well, it's not even all of the Android One devices. Like, it's just the right. ones that have been launched here in the Philippines. Because we have... Alex Stobe over at Android Central has the Micromax
right.
Android
right.
One device that was announced, and it's still, you know, Android 5.0.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll just have to wait and see. But additionally, finally, we've heard a little bit about this before, but there's a report with some more information that says that Google is actively discussing plans with select developers to zero-rate data used by certain apps. This would cut down or even eliminate mobile data usage for those apps. And this is, I feel like this has been a hot button story for the past week, this whole question of the zero rate data kind of change, which, you know, really, you know, is kind of Google kind of stepping up and saying, you know, we want to help developers and we want to help developing countries be able to use these things. And so we're going to absorb the data rate costs,
mm-hmm.
Which
it's
is kind
cool.
of, yeah, which is really cool. Right? Them, I thought, yeah.
So. Kind of ties in well with that Facebook version that we saw
right.
a few
Facebook
weeks ago.
Light.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are any of you using that, Russell?
I'm not using it, no. But another great app that does this is Wikipedia. Wikipedia has a couple of different countries where they work with carriers where the entirety of Wikipedia is free in those on those carriers in those countries.
Mm-hmm. Ah, cool.
So it's stuff that's been happening for a little while now. It's very cool to see it expand.
Yeah, depending on the region, this could actually be a really, really important thing
yeah.
when you think about it. I mean... Just affording the device is going to be a challenge, let alone affording the device and then affording a monthly fee that's, yep. you know, data-driven and all that kind of stuff. So this could really convince certain people that, okay, it's worth, you know, all of that money up front to get the device to do it.
Yeah, the idea of subsidizing the data to enable usage is really smart when you think mm-hmm. about it. I mean, if they can get the plans in place with the carriers and then with the, you know, with the developers and whoever else they need to be, that's the best way to get, you know, build up to critical mass in a region.
Totally.
So I hope, I mean, all the rumors we're hearing about and stuff like that, I personally hope it's true because I yeah. feel like you don't really see anybody else leading the path globally like this other than Google. So
mm-hmm. I also hope that the the Google agreement with the carrier persists for a long time. Because otherwise, it's kind of like a gateway drug, right? It's like, here, have free XYZ, and then, you know, later on, you liked it, now you have to pay. And that would just not be cool, especially in developing countries.
Oh, for sure.
Like the playground drug dealer analogy, right? Yeah.
Right, and Google can afford it, right? Yeah. I mean, they get search results which pay, you know, their bills. So, I mean, hopefully it can stay that way.
Sure.
Well, so in India, Google foots the bill for the software updates. Like, if updates come out for the Indian version of the Android One phones, and Google foots the bill for that, the carrier just lets the update happen, and Google pays for that. So that's a 2-year arrangement that they have through Micromax and through the carriers there in India.
Hmm. Interesting.
Cool.
Very cool. We'll see more of that, hopefully. So this is cool. What can you tell us about Expose? Expose, I will admit, is something that I keep meaning to spend time with, but I have to root my device in order to do it. I keep putting that off.
Just like Russell, I have no idea. My notes here, basically, I'm just going to run through it quickly. I mean, Expose framework has basically been a very popular way to modify underlying portions of Android,
right,
without having to flash a new ROM and get extra features. So it's flexible, can be easily undone, which is great. And it is it's only applied in memory, so, you know, it can be deactivated at reboot, that kind of stuff. The problem is that it hasn't worked with Lollipop and Art, it doesn't support Art runtime. So this is changing now, apparently. That's just what this story is about. It's part of a new alpha build of Expose, and the Expose API is unchanged, so modules don't need to be written. If you've got something that uses the Expose API, it still works, and now you get Lollipop and Art runtime support. That's nice. Basically
That's very
it.
Cool. Yeah, Android 4 devices and up. So if you haven't already, you know, with the update, you're still going to have active modules. As an interesting thing, I have to promise myself that I'm going to do this. At some point, I'm going to root my Nexus 5 because I need to play around with Expose.
It needs to be rooted, right?
I've fallen behind.
It needs to be rooted.
Yes, it is. It does require root.
Okay.
But basically what it is, from what I understand, is, you know, in the days when I was really rooting and ROMing, you know, with the Motorola Droid.
Back in the day.
Back in those days.
Do you remember those
days? Back in time.
You were a daily build guy.
Yes, exactly. A lot of those fancy kind of upgrades to your OS came from the ROM specifically. So you'd choose to install a ROM because it had all these extra bells and whistles and features and made this modification that gave you, you know, the battery percentage change as opposed to just a solid, graphical bar. All that underlying stuff. Exposed is a way to kind of like piece it out and run it in memory, essentially, so it bypasses the ROM that's working underneath and allows you to, you know, upon reboot, from what I understand anyways, it applies these changes to the system and you experience all those things without having to flash like an entirely new ROM. So it sounds very cool. It sounds very very just kind of flexible. I just need to
It sounds great. What's the catch?
Well, the catch is
that if the developer doesn't know what they're doing, it can be super dangerous.
Exactly.
As usual, when dealing with anything
root level. This is what I love about being an Android user, is that you never know. Your phone tomorrow might be a gigantic security sieve.
if you make the choice to root your device and go down this path, yeah, it is kind of a minefield,
I suppose. Those Apple users.
If you don't know what you're doing.
They have no idea what risk really is.
They just live in this protected world where everything works. And then,
jailbroken users can uninstall equally maddeningly dangerous apps.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Yep.
So there we go. So hey,
see that rooting and romping. That is the show title. That's pretty good. It's pretty naughty. Somebody's naughty.
I'll put that in the maybe category. We'll see what else comes up. Cool. Okay. So Russell, you had posted to Android Central. I think it was last week. A kind of Q&A that you had with Adrian Ludwig, who's who's Google's lead engineer for Android security. And, you know, I feel like all the time we're seeing these reports or seeing, you know, this article, that, and everybody, of course, runs with it, that Android is insecure because X, Y, and Z, because this app, you know, got permission
Android
to do this
will
thing
get you
or
pregnant.
Whatever. Yeah, Android will get you a lot of things, apparently. And so I just thought this was kind of a good Q&A. I want to shine light on it a little bit so that people understand why, when that happens, publications like Android Central say, hey, the sky is not falling. Here are the reasons why. What would you say is kind of like a big takeaway from your Q&A with Adrian Ludwig?
So the biggest takeaway is that Google works unbelievably hard to keep the apps in the Google Play Store safe and to keep the apps that you install sideloaded safe on your device. And the combination of those two things, I was unaware of just how much work went into making sure that these things are safe. And it applies to so many different kinds of Android, including people who install custom ROMs and people who use things like exposed frameworks. The Google Play services framework is actually incredibly verbose in making sure that your app catalog is safe and making sure that apps that are entering the Play Store are scanned both by humans and by robots to make sure that so many different things are you know, just behaving the way that they should be. And when I was talking to Adrian, one of the interesting things was how often they have to change what properly behaving actually means. Mm-hmm. Now that we're seeing apps that take advantage of notifications to spam almost like pop-up ads.
Right.
It was a big example of the kind of thing that they have to keep an eye on because, you know, a year ago, technically that wasn't breaking any rules. It was just, you know, poor behavior on behalf of the app. But now it's being treated a lot more like, you know, spam that needs to be removed.
Mm-hmm. I also found it interesting. There's kind of a little part where you guys talk about antivirus apps, because, you know, regularly you hear people saying, oh, well, this is going to keep your device secure, you know, running this app or killing these processes or whatever the case may be. From that, fewer than 0.15% of applications installed from outside of Google Play to U.S. English devices classified as potentially harmful applications, given the built-in protection provided by Verify apps, which Verify apps, by the way, is a pretty powerful thing. Like you were talking about, you know, it applies to apps that are installed through the Play Store as well as outside of the Play Store, rooted devices, non-rooted, all that kind of stuff. Provided by Verify apps and the low frequency of occurrence of installation, the potential security benefit of an additional security solution is very small. So he's kind of putting to rest the fact that it's such a small percentage of devices that might, you know, benefit from such protection, and be just as a category on Android, it really kind of seems potentially kind of useless. Is that a dangerous comment to make, or do you think that's probably pretty accurate?
It's not, but it's also important to put it in context. One of the big things that we deal with security research right now is some kind of you know, security research for how apps are handling data. And that's still an important thing. And every once in a while, the security app, you know, ecosystem will catch something before Google does. And that's where you see the blog post about how, you know, how evil a chess app is being and things like that. But it's one of those things where, you know, in those situations, the apps themselves that these companies are making are also not detecting these apps. This is, you know, kind of long-term research that results in these things. And as soon as Google sees the published work, then they go and do the same thing they would have done if they had found the app themselves. So, you know, it's not to say that the security work isn't important, but the apps themselves really just aren't that helpful.
Right. Well, interesting stuff. It's a good read. You should definitely take a look at it if you haven't already. Just look for look on Android Central. It's a Q&A with Google's Adrian Ludwig, and it comes straight from the horse's mouth. It's direct from Google. So a lot of interesting kind of points on just the depth of their security work that I didn't know. Like bits and pieces we've read, but it's nice to see it all in one place. And that's when you get a true sense of like, okay, they're really kind of doing their research.
The unsung heroes almost of it, you know, like the under the radar stuff that we don't, you know, we hear about the sexy, the design and the mm-hmm. marketing stuff like that. But this stuff sometimes, you know, kind of.
But that's why Android Central is so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I got a chance to work with Russell at CES since I covered the show for Android Central amongst other Mobile Nations blogs.
As I sat and did nothing because my leg was broken.
Come on, you did not do nothing. That is not true. You did have a hard time moving around, but you were injured, so it's fair enough. It's hard to do CES when you're injured. Yeah. But it's hard to do CES when you're not injured.
Right.
The point I'm making is that, you know, kudos to Android Central for covering this kind of stuff. Getting like it all in one place for you to read. Because I think that's the problem, right? Oftentimes you find really great articles, but they're kind of scattered, especially in the Android universe, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have that kind of nice, you know, congealment thing going on that you see in other blogs. And so I want to see more of that. I want to see more Android stories that are, as you said, Ron, not about design or reviews,
not the underlying,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's getting into the weeds with it, getting into like the deep aspects of it, that we need this stuff and we need these people working on it in order for it to function. And and so it's I don't want to say it's not the sexy stuff, but it's not the, you know, the not the sexy stuff.
I know what you mean there.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway. All right. Well, speaking of the not the sexy stuff, we got an interesting email that I think taps into this in an interesting tangent. Mike from Melbourne, Australia writes in and says, "Good day from an Australian fan. I have a question for the team in regard to the popular belief with smartphone users that you need to buy a new phone every 2 years. This seems to go against the Android platform usage breakdown that shows more than half the users are using versions of Android that are over 3 years old, and many older than that. The only people I know who buy a new phone every 2 years are the ones using iPhones, and that's because the battery is no longer holding a charge. One of the reasons I chose a Samsung Note 2 and its replaceable battery. I still have my Note 2 for just over 2 years, and it's still going strong. I see no need to replace it. So where does this belief that you need to replace a smartphone every 2 years come from? Marketing ploy or the life expectancy of iPhones?" And
that's a good question.
I think it's marketing ploy, at least here in the States, because, it might be about 10 years ago now, but Verizon adopted an interesting marketing campaign called New Every Two. And for whatever reason, that became the de facto, and even with the other carriers, it was just like every 2 years you could get a discount on a new phone.
So true. You know, and I hadn't even considered that aspect, but I was with Verizon for a long time, and that kind of did program me to think that every 2 years I get a new device, and that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I think it even predates that. Simply the plans in the U.S. have traditionally been 2 years, and the U.S. is a big market, and the carriers are very powerful. Yep. And the reality is, if you look at Google, right, they support their Nexus devices maybe 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. You know, Apple kind of leads the way, I have to say, about supporting their devices for about 4 years, right? And sometimes it's just three, but like that's about right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kudos. I agree with this fan. I think it's, you know, we should try to recycle and reuse as many of these devices. Mm-hmm. Older phones make great little tablets, especially the larger ones. Yep. And because you can use them on Wi-Fi. But at the same time, you know, some of the apps just won't run and install properly anymore. I found, you guys remember the HTC Cha-Cha?
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
It was called something else in the U.S., wasn't it?
It had a different name. It did have a different name.
It was an AT&T. Come on, chat room. Save me. Status, thank you.
Good job, Wade County.
Thank you. All right. So I pulled the Cha-Cha out the other day, and I was like, this is cool. Let's go retro, right? Able to install my stuff on it, like pretend. Nothing worked.
Really?
Nothing worked. Like, it wouldn't install half of the apps. And, I mean, we're talking, what, Eclair or something? I mean, it's really old, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a point at which, unfortunately, this reader's or listener or viewer's phone is just going to fall off the cliff, basically. And you know, for better or for worse, that's the reality.
Well, and there's also the question of whether or not there's built-in obsolescence into the devices, and which is in the manufacturer's best interest to do that, as I've discovered with my my 2012 Nexus 7, which now is pretty much as functional as a doorstop.
Is built-in obsolescence is it a conspiracy theory, or do you think it's real?
I think it's real. I don't think it's conspiracy. I think it's real, but it's real by necessity. I really honestly think if you look at the history of consumer electronics, no product ever has had such an accelerated development curve as smartphones.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can touch the kind of – look, TVs, you can buy a TV and generally be okay for like 5 years, right? I mean, you know, you buy a 1080p TV today, you're going to miss 4K in 5 years.
Yeah. But
you buy
a phone is a computer.
You used to buy a TV and for 20 years. I mean, like, honestly, my parents had a 27-inch TV in our living room. I remember the day we got it in 1987, and we replaced it in 2004 when I bought them a new TV.
Right.
Like, which is, when you think about it, crazy.
That's exactly what's happening, and it's just kind of like all compressing in. But phones have always been a pretty high accelerated rate. And I don't know why you fix that. And I think our entire world works like that. Like, people lease cars instead of buying them. They're basically renting a car and getting a new one every 3 or 4 years, right?
That's
how people think.
More and more addicted to technology.
Right.
And we become more and more used to upgrading on a regular basis.
For example, I would love to know who I could talk to figure out how to get a phone to last 2 years. Because even before I started doing this, I would upgrade my phone as often as I could. You know, it's always been something that I've done. I've always upgraded way too early just because I, you know, whatever the shiny new thing is. So I'm definitely part of the problem there.
I think if we're horrified by this, we need to remember that we're creating a lot of waste. And so we need to try to recycle as much of it as we can.
Yeah.
And we're certainly guilty. I mean, me and us, I think in general, the early adopters is tech savvy, right? Because we're like, I go through 50 phones a year. I mean, they're not mine, but I return them. But where do they go, right? Yeah. What do they do with them? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a good question.
It's fascinating.
It's hard to reprogram. At the same time, I think every one of us is in a strange situation. Yes. In this discussion, because at least I can speak for myself. I get new devices all the time. Yeah. for what I do. So that has also reprogrammed my brain.
Well, that falls back to my whole question of like, okay, I want to know what the normal people do. Because we are not the normal people. We get itchy trigger fingers, and they announce a new phone, and we're right there ready on day one to buy it and to try it out, or we break the glass on our screens and we get a new one, and whatever reason we can think of to get a new device, we're always looking for it. But, you know, I look at somebody like I always use like my sister as an example. She's got an HTC One that she's had now for a couple of years, and I don't think she needs a new one. Like, yeah. It seems to be humming along. But yeah. Before that, she had an HTC, I forget which HTC she had, but she was on Verizon, so one of those HTCs that were on there. And it just plugs along. I mean, for me, I often wonder why my phone is slowing down, and I just assume it's because I'm putting a massive amount of use on it, you know, because I'm constantly installing and uninstalling apps like we do, and constantly, you know, running the battery down because I'm at events and I'm, you know, using Wi-Fi and I'm using Bluetooth and I'm using every service possible. And you gotta wonder is what part of the bell curve are we? I feel like we're on the small part.
You're just wearing out the flash.
Yeah, yeah, true.
That's why
yeah.
it's slowing down. Yeah. No, but look, I mean, I would also say there's a counter argument here. My Nexus 5 was my main phone for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
That's how good the phone is.
And this is for
somebody like me who still has access to all these other devices. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that it's not a good phone is a good phone, and you're going to use it as long as you can. And so I'm not sure if there's necessarily any plan of obsolescence. If you look at it today, they still sell the Nexus 5 and people are buying it.
Yeah. I still recommend it.
The obsolescence are that they're setting. I mean, there are different dials that can turn on the computer, the obsolescence computer. So, yeah.
All right.
Interesting discussion, though. All right, let's take a break and thank one of our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com. With Squarespace, it's easy for you to create a professional website, blog, or online store. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. My own personal site is running Squarespace, and anytime I need to make a new website or tell a friend what to use, I send them straight over to Squarespace because it is clearly the best. And here's why. It's simple, powerful, and beautiful. Making changes is clearer and simpler than ever. It's incredibly easy to use. And if you need some help, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, and they take care of hosting so you don't have to. Plus, you get a free domain name if you purchase Squarespace for a year. All Squarespace websites are responsive and scale to look great on any device. Try it on your phone or your tablet. They look great. E-commerce is available. Every website comes with a free online store. They've got this new option called Cover Pages where you can set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. It's perfect for creating a quick landing page for your brand, personal identity, or to promote a new product. So start a trial today with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use their offer code AboutAndroid to get 10% off your first purchase. We thank Squarespace for their support of All About Android. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
I love that Squarespace is a sponsor of this show. I'm such a huge fan of their service.
They're great. So, I mean, it just makes it so easy. Like, I can't tell you how many people they're like, "Hey, I need to do a site. I'm putting out this book or I'm putting out this whatever." Just go to Squarespace. You don't have to know how to code. You don't need to know CSS.
Make it look modern.
Yeah. And they've got all those hooks and plugs into services and photos and things like that. It's beautiful. They're great.
So awesome. Squarespace.
Check them out.
Thank you, Squarespace.
We love you.
Okay. We don't have apps this week, so it's going to be like a two for hardware block. Right. So let's run the hardware block bumper the first time.
We need to like Hardware Strikes Back.
I wanted bumper. Well, actually, I wanted to go in this one and change the spelling to hard W E A R.
Oh,
hard wear.
See what you did there.
Because it's pretty much all Android Wear stuff. But then I realized I can't do that. I'm not good at that.
Well,
it would be the cheapest like graphic overlay, like
there blows my
Helvetica font.
There
over
goes
the top.
My theory that you are in fact just Jeff Kosmicki.
No. Yeah.
Because I've never seen you and Jeff Kosmicki in the same place.
True.
And Ray Gun, Ray Gun 01.
Jeff Jason.
It's weird. I know. The similarities are crazy.
I think it's all cover.
Yeah. We'll keep it up. I'm doing a good job convincing you guys otherwise.
You are.
So Android Wear. We got a few stories on Android Wear this week. Canalys, this is a study that I feel like we've been hearing about a lot the past week, but it's got some interesting tidbits. Canalys, published a report last week with a few interesting data points specifically about Android Wear. First, since launch last June, so 7 months-ish or so, 720,000 Wear devices have shipped. Not sold, according to their data anyways, but that's device shipments, 720,000. That's less than 0.1% of smartphone users basically owning an Android Wear device. Not a huge number, but then when you consider the amount of Android users worldwide, you know, it actually kind of makes sense. Moto 360 is clearly ahead of the pack as far as number of devices in use at the moment. The Guacher. The G-Watch R, the LG G-Watch R, outperformed the Guach, the G-Watch. I think that's kind of no surprise, between the two.
Duh, right?
Comparisons that we've been hearing about, one of which I think is kind of baloney. The comparison to iPhone is, I think, what everybody likes to do. They like to say, 720,000 Wear devices shipped since the middle of last summer. 34,000 iPhones sell per hour.
That's not fair.
Comparing an established category and brand like iPhone against something that just started.
How many gallons of milk sell per hour?
I know,
yeah,
right?
Clearly.
It just doesn't make sense to
me. How many regular watches? Or how many
bags of socks are sold every day?
I like it. I like the way you think. It's perfect. I was thinking, iPods might be a better comparison. iPods when they launched, right?
Yeah, maybe.
So iPods when it launched was kind of a new but, important product launch for that particular category. There were music players before then, but that was the first mega push. 700,000 iPods sold between 2001 and 2002. That's 2 years. 700,000 reported devices sold compared to 720,000 Wear devices, although this is shipped, not sold. So there's probably a little bit of a difference there, but that's 2 years versus half a year. So maybe that's a good comparison. And 1 million Pebbles sold to date.
Those guys,
So
there you go. I think the thing that's interesting to me is that, phones have skewed our perception of the numbers, right? Because the phones are just like, there was a time, I can't remember when Nokia was the top of its game, like in terms of sales, that I think they were selling 1 million phones a day. Think about this for
worldwide.
Yeah. 1 million freaking phones.
Because they were
in so
many markets. I mean, they had Scandinavia.
Wrap your head around.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But the other thing, that other numbers that came up recently that blew my mind is Apple makes $50,000 in sales a minute. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, Apple is a monster.
Boom.
Yeah, well, speaking of Apple being the monster, what I was going to mention, which John Fingus just mentioned in the chat room, that the initial orders for Apple on the Apple Watch coming out are in the range of about 5 million. Of course, now those aren't sales. It hasn't been sold yet.
But
that's what Apple is
smart,
producing,
and
what they see their demand is going to be.
Wow.
If they, and that puts an order of 5 million in that first, first wave, gives them at a projection of about, if those all sell, and then the future orders after that, about 10 million in the first year, which is a significant increase over what Android Wear sales have been.
That's the thing. I think it's going to benefit both Pebble and Android Wear.
Yes,
honestly, Apple is going to become the ambassador for the category. And whether we like it or not, I'm not here to judge that. I'm just making a point, and I think the point is simple. Apple selling stuff sells Android and other products, and it's only going to be beneficial to the entire segment. Because everyone wants to or can afford to or is interested in plunking down a minimum of $350 for a smartwatch when, Pebble's $99 entry point and Android Wear is, 100 $150, $120 you can buy an Android Wear now?
The Pro 250, as high as, you know, if you go for the really nice ones. But what I'm more interested in is that, will the Apple Watch then usher in a period of acceptance of wearables and wearing a watch? Like, is that the push over the ledge? And then will you see combo deals like AT&T offering a phone and a G-Watch like they have been doing? I don't know how successful it's been. You know, but how much, how pervasive, what kind of bump will that on Android Wear devices see from those Apple ones? I mean, I don't know. I mean, Russell, what's your take on all this?
I think when it comes to the carrier giveaways, we're still seeing tablets as a novelty in that aspect. You know, so like you get a Samsung tablet when you get a new Galaxy Note 4 right now at a lot of the carriers. And that ends up being something that like people are genuinely excited about still. So when it comes to the smartwatches, I think we're still in this weird fog where unless you are one of us, you know, people talking about this technology constantly, it's not immediately obvious what this thing on my wrist actually does. I think that a lot of people, the best explanation that you get from the average user for Android Wear or for Pebble right now is that, oh, it puts your notifications on your wrist. Well, a lot of people aren't really going to care what that is. And when you start talking about the fitness thing, the first question I hear every single time I bring it up is, oh, so it's like a Fitbit. So it's these smartwatches need a standalone feature that is something that they own, you know, a piece of technology that they own. And right now, I kind of feel like they don't have it. And Apple may be the company to create that space.
I think that's a great point, that the killer app on the wearable hasn't really presented itself. And I think that we've seen, I mean, how long has Fitbit been around? I mean, it's been like, what, 7 years of the Fitbit as an entity, as a product?
Wow, has it?
Yeah,
wow.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have guessed that long.
Yeah, maybe like 5-6 years. No, we're getting old, Jason, really fast.
I know it.
But we've watched Fitbit evolve from the little paperclip thing to the bracelet, which now has become accepted. You see people, regular people, commuting, meetings and things like that, wearing their whatever the thing is, you know, whatever it's, if it's a Fitbit or the Jawbone one or whatever it might be. And so that's become accepted. That's a wearable, is something that's a fitness tracker. I've been describing my Android Wear phone as a second screen for my phone. Which is a little harder to describe in a marketing message, but when you're talking to someone, it's like, oh yeah, not only can I get all my notifications, but I can control my running app, I can control my podcast app, I can do a search, I can do all this sort of, like, and once you then like, oh okay, I get it. It's an extension of the phone, but still it's not a killer app.
Yeah, exactly. They get it. They may get it, but they still might have a hard time understanding why they need it.
Exactly. Right.
Because most people would hear that and be like, yeah, but I'm fine with pulling out my phone to do that.
Until they're not. And that's the thing to me. Mm-hmm. When I was at Pebble, if you give people the opportunity to try it out for a while, if they're, you know, if they're in an environment where they needed to care about their notifications, it just changed their lives.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why it's come a long way. But you're right, trying to get them hooked in the first place is really hard. And
my two favorite examples right now are in the kitchen and in the car. And the kitchen is a weird one. I've had to show a couple of friends in the house where they didn't quite get it, where I'm like sliding something in the oven and I have something on, you know, cooking on the stove and something like that. And I, you know, shout down to my wrist to set a timer for something because there's something else going on in the kitchen that's being done. And
that's cool.
The response is, you know, kind of a step back where they go, whoa, okay, so I get why that's useful now. Yeah. And then the same thing in the car when you're doing GPS, you know, it is just plain more convenient having that screen on your wrist than it is, you know, having your phone in your cup holder or having it stuck to your windshield. But actually demonstrating that unless you're in those scenarios is not easy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now for me, I mean, on the drive up here to Petaluma today, I had, you know, I'm driving and I'm getting emails on my phone and I'm responding to them just with speech and text messages and things like that. My phone isn't leaving the console, which as Jason, you can attest in the past, I've been very guilty of not doing that. So, you know, to me, it's already improved my life in from a driving standpoint. And also just not have, you know, on a commuting standpoint, not taking the phone out of my pocket to look at a text message, stuff like that. I don't need to respond to it immediately, but I can say, okay, yeah, I saw that, and not have to like maneuver, especially when you're packed in a Muni and it's awful.
Right.
But again, I agree with Russell that none of that is a killer use case, a killer app that makes this must have. And honestly, I don't know that Apple has it either. I'll be curious to see if something emerges or if a developer comes up with it, but it's still just a second screen for the iPhone.
Yeah, but what Apple has is they have this crazy ability, even failing that, to just have the –
yeah,
it's like they have a gravitas for this kind of thing, where all they really have to do is, well, we're Apple, we have this device, and that's why you need it.
Right.
And people will give them a pass for that and try it out just for that reason.
And you know, I know this is about all about Android, but if you look at the, you know, the history of Apple in the last few weeks and their, you know, their revenue and all that, oh, and you look at the bonkers success in China, right? These are markets where bling is important.
Yeah. Mm.
People are going to maybe buy a Rolex. Sure. That's the ultimate statement maybe of wealth, right? Mm-hmm. But there's rumors that the high-end gold watches from Apple are going to be in that price range.
Yeah.
So at that point, then why, you know, you want the latest and the best and the greatest. You don't buy the Xiaomi, you buy the iPhone. Well, you don't want to buy the Rolex, you buy the Apple Watch, the rose gold $15,000 edition. Trust me, our minds will get blown when we see those prices. They're going to be in that range. I think Gruber is right about the prices. And so ultimately, it's going to become a status symbol. And there are a lot of people who wear watches who just want to wear a watch. They don't care about notifications, just wearing a watch. And now it's a gateway drug, right? They start not caring about the connected part. And then it's connected.
That's such a strange way to think about it.
And it's like, oh,
I got it because it looked cool. Yeah. And then I realized it did stuff.
Right? And I think, honestly, like, I don't really think it's ever going to be as popular as phones.
Yeah. No,
it's like
I don't.
Tablets, right? Look at tablets. Tablets have plateaued, right? Even the iPad has plateaued.
Yep.
And I personally don't use a tablet much at all. But I get their usefulness. I get the utility. And I get the watch usefulness and utility. And lots of people are going to buy them. And then once you start getting into the millions and millions and millions, you know, it's going to be a worthy segment to be in. And it's going to drive sales on Android. And it's going to drive sales on Pebble. And it's going to drive sales on Microsoft Band. And people are going to understand that the watches are a little bit more sophisticated than their bands, like Fitbit and Jawbone bands. And who knows? Fitbit and Jawbone might start making watches soon.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, they kind of almost do.
Yeah,
if you look
they're
at some
close
of the,
enough. Yeah,
some of the I think Fitbit products are like wow.
Yeah, they'll do the crossover, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, we have a few more watches to.
Oh my god! This is Android Wear. I mean, this is hardware.
Hardware. You can't say it differently. It just sounds.
So speaking of Watcher and the Guatcher. So LG revealed this week the LG Watch Urbane, is that how you say it?
Urbane? I believe so. Yeah. Urbane.
It's like urban urbane.
So urbane.
And basically, the guts of it is essentially the same technology as the G Watch R, the Watcher. Mm-hmm. But it's so it's a plastic OLED display, which is cool. Well, glass covered, but plastic underneath. And it comes in a polished silver, polished gold steel body with stitched leather. It looks really hot. And I actually love that it doesn't have the little diver watch thing around the edges.
Yeah.
This thing looks hot. I really think this is one of the... I mean, for me, it's between that and the Zen Watch and maybe the Moto 360 and for Android Wear now. I mean, the G-Watch R was okay, but this is one step up. Right?
What was the name of that crazy watch that we found months ago? What was it? I can't remember.
Oh, man, I can't remember. Yeah. Chat room, help me out. That was not an Android Wear watch.
No, it was an Android Wear watch, but it was pre-launch, and it was that crazy with the see-through display.
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of them out of China that have the see-through display. Anyway, just to finish up with the Urbane, it's going to probably be launched at Mobile Congress. I'll be there, and I'll let you know.
You'll see it.
I'll try to compile a little video of the stuff I see for the show.
That'd be
awesome. So maybe when I come back, we can roll that video.
Sure.
And if I can get enough stuff to give you to roll on the Tuesday of the event, I'll just Dropbox you that stuff.
Fantastic.
We'll go. But anyway, so check it out. Urbane, LG.
The Kairos.
The Kairos, yes.
Oh, yeah,
the Kairos.
It's not the only one, though. Like, you have to understand, Kairos uses essentially an engine, like the mechanical movement and the display from another Chinese manufacturer.
So there are others
There's a bunch of them that are Android-based that use this engine.
Yeah.
And Kairos is probably the hottest one of them all, in my opinion. But
Free Wi-Fi in the chat is saying something that I think is kind of interesting, because if you have an Android Wear device at this point, you probably notice the resolution on the screen. I noticed it with my Moto 360 that, you know, it's usually right around 320 by 320 with most of these watches. Free Wi-Fi is saying it needs to be bumped to 1280 by 1280.
Would you like a separate wrist brace that has the 10-pound battery.
Exactly. Exactly. I was going to say before the Nexus 6. Right. Before the Nexus 6, I would have totally been right there with your free Wi-Fi. But after the Nexus 6, and I realized like the QHD display is a big part of the reason why the battery, the massive battery in the Nexus 6, actually doesn't perform as well as you would expect it to.
Right.
That's because it's powering all those pixels. I'm not so sure 1280 by 1280 is very smart on your wrist. It would look pretty. It just wouldn't last very
long. But did you guys see Ron Amadeo at Ars Technica? He tweeted or not tweeted.
Oh, yes,
G Plus, the thing he says, those ads from LG are misleading. Like, they've rendered this watch like with the watch face at an incredible resolution.
Oh, they rendered
and then
it as sharp
redid,
as possible.
He redid it, and it was like, oh, this is what it would look like. At
put the pixelation in there, and that's about what it's
and,
like.
And, you know, I'm, Ron is a troublemaker, but in this case, I think he was rightfully a troublemaker.
Yeah.
I would actually say that we should keep an eye on this, because I really do believe that the quote-unquote retina resolution for the fact that watches are luxury things is going to become really important, and I think Apple is going to nail
Apple
it.
Might,
they,
Apple
they
might
already,
hit it.
No, no, it's pretty clear that they're doing Retina, but we don't know exactly the resolution, right? So we'll see how it goes.
It'll probably look better
and, of
than
course,
what we
the battery
already.
Life will be very interesting. Very interesting.
Exactly. Yep. Well, so to wrap up Android Wear, our friends over at Pebble now have rolled out Android Wear integration. So now Pebble devices can officially receive Android Wear notifications when synced with other Android Wear Android Wear device. So if you're a Pebble user, you can get it on the game.
So I'm on the beta channel, and I've been using that for a while now, and it's really awesome. If you use your Pebble, you now can just, you know,
apply
stuff.
It's nice to see it. Nice to see it all kind of merging in. So there it is.
Yeah.
So.
It's progress.
Yep.
I like progress.
All right.
I'm a fan of progress, generally. So Huawei Honor 6 Plus.
Yes.
Kind of a mouthful.
I brought a little toy for you guys. I probably have one of five of these in the U.S. right now.
Wow.
It is the Huawei. You ready for this? Huawei Honor 6 Plus. And it looks exactly like an iPhone 6 Plus. Well, not quite exactly. Actually, it looks like an old iPhone 4 and 4. There we go. If you want to see it, like, let me just give you a tour quickly. You see this metal band here? That's real metal, and it actually is very much like the iPhone 4, 4S would be. So not aluminum, but like stainless steelish. Like, you can see the antenna bands and stuff, right? And then what's interesting, though, is it stops down here, and then you get to the plastic. This is where the antennas are, I guess. It's glass back and front. I don't know if you see the reflection. I can't get any reflections. Amazing. There we go, a little bit here. And then, of course, glass in the front. What's interesting about this phone, you probably noticed when I gave you the tour, is not so much that it's, you know, trying to be an iPhone 6 Plus. It's a Chinese Android phone for the Chinese market with a weird launcher. But what I wanted it for was this. Have you seen the back? You see that? Two cameras? So you're going to say, oh, you know, duo setup or 3D or no, it's none of that. And that's what's cool about it is it's the first phone that uses two cameras for a specific purpose. And that's that you can have adjustable variable aperture. And so I don't know how many photography geeks there are out there, but you know what that means? No phone has done that. There is a few Nokias that had two aperture settings. And then, of course, the K Zoom and the Galaxy S4 Zoom from Samsung had they obviously had you know an entire camera grafted to their back. So anyway, let me just show you what I mean.
That isn't a Lytro kind of emulation.
Well, it does some of the things Lytro does, and it does some of the things that dual camera does in the terms of like being able to refocus after the fact. But it gives you the aperture, which I'll show you in a second. So first of all, let me show you really quickly what the camera app looks like. So there we go. We got M&Ms. Perfect.
By the way, Android version M very well could be M&M. So we could be
could be ahead of the game here.
So we're ahead of the game. So you see there's a wide aperture setting here. And with this setting, I can change the aperture from all the way f over 16 down to f over 0.95. And so as you can see, that gives it super shallow depth of field. And so if I take a picture in this setting, I want a bunch of different things in the background here, maybe get some of the background. So if I focus on this point and take a picture at this really crazy aperture setting, now I have a picture that I can tweak after the fact. And let me show you what
I
mean.
That's kind of the Lytro-ish
quality. That's kind of the Lytro stuff, but you can change the aperture, which is even better. So as you can see, you got a beautiful picture with You know, nice close up of the M&Ms. Of course, they're behind a slightly dense plastic cover, so they look and everything goes dissolves in the back, right?
Yeah.
Great. But watch this. If I go into this aperture mode, now I can change the aperture after the fact and look at the Twit mug. It's getting clearer in the back.
Yeah, and
if I go all the way, look at that. Everything's clear in the back.
Yeah, cool.
And then now the best part is if I tap on something else, I can focus on this part and focus on that part. So you not only have refocusing ability, but you have narrow depth of field adjustment capability, which I think is really fantastic. So let me show you. This is a picture I'm taking live in the studio. Let me show you a few that this is a bit too much of a macro shot to really be beneficial. But I have a few that I've taken already that are really kind of good for this, like this one. So this one's great. I don't know if you can see it. So right now it's focused on the first bottle. And if I this is a shot I took last night, so I can then refocus on this bottle. Or on that one back here, or on this one back there. Or, you know, but if I change the aperture to, you know, the widest, where's my slider? There it is. Now I've got everything in focus, which is really kind of interesting. So this is one of the things I love about this camera. There's another thing that I want to show you that's really, really clever. And because it has two 8-megapixel camera sensors in the back, it can now get better low light performance.
Ah, excellent.
So in regular photo mode,
is it like an HDR style approach?
It's more like it gathers more light because it has two sensors basically.
Oh, okay.
And so they have a super night mode, which won't really be helpful here. But I wanted to show you the UI. I don't know if you can see it. Let me put it on something black, like
Can you kill the lights, Brian? Maybe
actually,
that'll
no. Here. The mug. Okay. You see these settings there? I don't know if you see them.
Yeah, down at the bottom.
There's a bunch of settings at the bottom here. Can you see? There you go. So cool. You've got, now you can adjust your ISO, but you can also adjust your shutter speed. So if I want to take a really non-grainy photo, I can set the ISO to 100. And then I can say, I want a 2-second long exposure, right? And then you can get these really nice long trail shots at night.
As long as you can hold your phone super still.
Exactly. But if you mount it on a tripod, let me show you what I've done. I actually handheld this shot I'm going to show you now. Check this out. See, so there's a super long Muni bus.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, okay, it's so gimmicky, but check out how clear that picture is in the background. Look at the quality.
That's really nice.
Of the textures and everything and the detail and the clouds.
Is it up in Potrero?
This is Potrero, my neighborhood.
I know exactly where that is. I've eaten
And look at the, even look at the ground. Look at how much precision there is to this. So this is what I'm talking about.
You got that amount of smearing off of the bus. That's really cool.
You know, you lose the ability to do optical image stabilization since it doesn't have it because you'd have to synchronize two cameras to stabilize.
Right.
But at the same time, you get this really, really impressive low light performance, the ability to depth of field, change the depth of field, which I think is really cool. By the way, once you have a setting you like on that interactive UI, you can save the photo you want. So like if you want to focus on that one bottle, and it creates a JPEG with all the EXIF data you need. As far as the phone goes, I can't remember the specs off the top of my head right now. It's a kind of mid-range-ish phone or mid-range to upper-range phone. Perhaps we can look up the specs on the website right now. But what is it? I think it's Snapdragon 400, right? Or maybe it's 800. It's one of the newer Snapdragons anyway. But it's been fun to use. It works well. It doesn't come by default with Google Play stuff. But you can install it. It's interesting. It's installable right out of the box. And then, obviously, you have all the Google Play apps. And you can see here, I've got them. They're all installed here.
Kirin 925 octa-core.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's their own processor. So it's kind of a high-end. And then you get the Play Store here.
3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs storage, 3,600 milliamp hour battery. Yeah, this sounds
pretty good. It's pretty good specs. Stacked. Now, just to be aware, this is a Chinese phone. If you get it in the U.S., you will not be able to use it on 2G. Or on LTE. And why not 2G? Because it doesn't support, it's somehow tri-band. So all the carriers in the U.S., like T-Mobile and AT&T, are dropping their 2G support for 1900. So you can do 2G on 850, but no longer on 1900. So you're pretty much SOL. It does work on 2G on T-Mobile because they still support 1900. But 3G works fine on both T-Mobile and AT&T. And LTE is just not supported because it's TDD, LTE, or whatever, the time division. But it's dual SIM.
Bands.
It's dual SIM. So if you see here, there's two SIM slots, one for a micro SIM and one for a nano SIM. And the nano SIM slot doubles as a micro SD card slot.
Oh, that's clever.
So it's cool. You can pick either dual SIM or single SIM.
That's actually really smart.
Yeah it's not the first phone to do that. And you can see, you know, there's an infrared port up here for your remote control, a headphone jack. Nice. Dual LED. It's a pretty high-end phone. It's really well made. Honestly, you know, I wish LG, who still makes, is the only one left making plasticky phones, made a phone this nice. I mean, this is all metal. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice.
So highly recommended.
Cool.
1080p display, by the way, 5.5 inches. It's an IPS panel. It's a very nice IPS panel.
Looks like about $320 unsubsidized.
One thing you should think about if you ever find a way to import this phone, other than the bands, is that the launcher is not replaceable. They've got something in their ROM.
Wait
that
a minute,
prevents
are you serious?
You. Yeah.
Wow.
I've tried many different launchers.
That's you weird. Know, you I've never normally, heard of that before.
Normally you can go clear defaults and get to the launcher somehow.
Yeah.
But they hijack the home key, basically.
Ooh, don't like that.
Interesting. And if you notice, their home key is actually set up such that if I go back in the camera app here, you'll see what I mean. They slide away these buttons, like, and then, you know, you get them back by setting them up.
Uh-huh.
So I think they're hijacking the whole kind of way Android does things with
That's
their
interesting.
Own. And also their launcher is really weird. Watch. There's no app tray. Everything is directly on an icon.
Right.
On.
Right.
There's
I do no, remember that from
and,
the Huawei
and,
device.
And
I use.
You've got notification tray, of course, but it's a very weird setup. Here's your shortcuts with all your settings.
So so basically, you got to be okay with the fact that Huawei has its
well,
own software.
Well, I'm sure that if you root it and Cyanogen and like XDA and all these folks will find
sure,
a way. But
sure.
right now, that's the only thing missing for me. I wish I could replace
crazy.
The launcher.
I've not
because
heard of
everything
that
else about it, I can live with the fact that it's just 3G, right?
Yeah.
But everything else about it is pretty good. And it's pretty snappy. Like, I've never heard of this processor, right? It's their own in-house.
Yeah.
But hey.
Not
cool
bad.
Phone, and you know, I was pretty blown away by the camera. Actually, it's you know, other than OIS, it's got all the trimmings.
Cool. Yeah, very nice. So that is the
Huawei
Honor 6
Plus.
That's a nice looking device in person as well as on video. But yeah, cool stuff there. Let's see here. Okay. Before we get into our second half of hardware, let's thank our second sponsor of today's episode, and that is LegalZoom. The best time to start getting your life organized is right now. I'm telling you, it's right now. The easiest place to do it is LegalZoom.com. Getting your life organized starts with protecting your family. A great way to take control of your family's future is to make a will or a living trust. This is something I did through LegalZoom. I don't know. It was shortly after we had our first daughter 5 years ago. LegalZoom, it was easy. It was super easy. And we have it stored away safely. So we have that. We actually have to update that for our second daughter in there as well. But it's going to be easy as well. LegalZoom can help you with this. There's no easier way to make sure your family is legally taken care of. Getting your life organized means taking care of and taking control of your financial affairs. So if you're thinking of starting a business or you have one already, LegalZoom can help you form your business and provide the support that you need to run it successfully. For more than 10 years, LegalZoom has helped millions of people get the personalized attention that they need. If you need legal advice or guidance, they can connect you with an independent attorney in most states since they're not a law firm. So here's what you can do. Don't wait any longer to organize your life. Go to LegalZoom.com and use offer code AAA to receive $10 off at checkout. For legal help you can count on for your family, for your small business, just go to LegalZoom.com today and remember to use offer code AAA. That'll get you $10 off your order. That's offer code AAA. We thank LegalZoom for their support of All About Android and the TWiT Network. And for my... you know, for making my will 5 years ago. Thanks for doing that. Before I even worked at TWiT, I used LegalZoom.
Right on.
All right. Do we run the bumper again? Just because
we
I
do.
Mean, it's, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Then let's do it.
Return of hardware.
The return.
This time
of
spelled
H
A R D W A R E.
Not revenge of hardware, because hardware doesn't take revenge.
Maybe a little bit of that too.
And a little music.
That's okay. It's
there
nice music. More Samsung Galaxy S6 leaks, supposedly. Further confirmation that the S6 will be released with pre-installed Samsung apps being removed from the device at launch. So we're hearing more and more about this. I'll be very curious to see if it happens.
Yep.
I'm starting to believe it.
I love this news. This news is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Think it's going to happen. I mean, it certainly follows in Google's footsteps of making their apps kind of installable. Russell, are you kind of believing what you're hearing about the S6 and the removable apps?
You know, it's something that we've seen here stateside anyway, with the carrier supported apps that Verizon does, where you can kind of flick through the stuff that you want to install beforehand. So I wouldn't say that it's impossible. And you know, Samsung's gotten kind of a bad rap over the last couple of years for their onboard storage being so completely full on brand new devices with some of the lower storage options. So this could be them attempting to address it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to see it happen. I think, I think we've heard enough rumors now that I'm wondering how much of it is true, how much of it has been amplified beyond recognition. I would be really surprised if it wasn't TouchWiz. And I would be surprised if maybe some of the apps are going to be packaged like HTC is doing as APKs that you can add after the fact and there's shortcuts ready to install or something.
Yeah, like right.
But I have a hard time seeing things like S voice not built in, like just because it's Samsung. Like, I don't know. I wanna believe, you know. Yeah. But
firmly
I don't know.
On the fence.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree. However, how does this tie into it? Sounds like Microsoft and Samsung might actually have an agreement to bring Microsoft's suite of apps to the phone pre-installed. That their premium apps like OneNote, OneDrive, Office Mobile, Skype. The Microsoft apps deal could actually be the result of an agreement that was made between the two companies last week after a 7-year patent cross-licensing deal fell apart. Microsoft filed suit. Both companies last week announced that the contract dispute had ended, and they didn't really discuss or disclose any terms of why it ended and what, you know, kind of resulted from this.
Sounds a lot like this Google-Samsung dispute
last year.
It kind of
does. Yes, right? It totally does.
But at the same time, to me, this actually makes a lot of sense. And, you know, back to my conspiracy theory from like 2 weeks ago or whatever. It's like, you know, this just proof to me that Microsoft is working on an Android phone. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know.
But more, I mean, I feel like for the past couple of weeks now, every story I'm reading leads back to Microsoft.
It's weird.
Like, I'm telling you, there's a huge change in the air when it comes to Microsoft and what they're doing is, and this, I mean, talk about wanting by making all the apps available on Android. So now you can get the Office app for free. I mean, instant accessibility, but having it appear on these Samsung devices, which we know are going to sell crazy. Like, mm-hmm. We know they're going to do really well. Whether or not they're going to do S4 well or S5 well is the question.
Right.
But even then, that's millions of people now who will start using that application and might be the first real threat to Google that Google's seen on the Android platform.
Look, I really think that what's been happening to Samsung this past year is the best thing that ever happened to Samsung. Right. They're losing
kind
their
–
like stumbling
the
and losing their lead because they have the resources to really kick ass. And they're doing it. Like – those metal phones like the Alpha and the Note 4 and obviously the GS6 are going to be what we've always wanted, and they are what we've always wanted. Just now they just need to knock the TouchWiz down a notch.
Yeah.
And you know, and if they make a phone with two edges like we've seen rumors of, right, the GS6 mm-hmm. Edge or whatever, the Galaxy Edge, I mean, yeah, why not? I mean, I'm not sure I'm into it, but I can see it's a great way to differentiate. And I really think Samsung's onto something, and I want to see them do more of that. Like, why not try to, you know, get back in your game by actually doing what people have been telling you for, like, how many years now?
Yes. I mean, it's interesting because I agree with you. I think that the stumbling is the best thing that happened to Samsung. But to me, this is way more about Microsoft than it is about Samsung.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft.
Helpful to both of them, but I think you're right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Microsoft not only doing this, but investing in CyanogenMod. Like, going back to your prediction about, you know, working on it, like, it's starting to get interesting. And I know, and the thing is that how many times have we been burned by Microsoft and, like, have we seen the past couple of years where it's, like, it's totally shifted where Microsoft became IBM. And, but if they can turn it around.
But Satya Nadella's strategy, I think, is sound and it's working. We're seeing the results of it. Like, I was on before BIOS Leo just earlier, and he showed a $59 Windows tablet running Windows 8.1.
Right?
Now, it's only Bay Trail, and it's 1 gig of RAM. But I hate to say this on All About Android, but having the choice between a $59 Android tablet and a $59 Windows tablet, I'd pick the Windows one just because there's all these legacy apps I can run. It's more universal. Like, there's more I can do with it.
It had like a full-size USB port.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Plug your peripherals into it.
The point is to me, like, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I love Android for tablets, but I'm just saying that if you if you're going to a limited budget and you need to spend money on one device, why not make it a tablet that's super cheap, that runs all the tablet apps, but at the same time can be plugged into a big TV and a keyboard, and all of a sudden you can run like old Photoshop that you might have floating around because it's x86 and because it's Windows compatible.
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, that's enticing. And that's because Satya and his team said, we're going to make licenses for Windows super cheap on these devices.
Yeah.
Russell, do you feel like we're kind of on the precipice of seeing Microsoft become a big player, a bigger player in the Android world right now? Does it kind of feel like all the stars are pointing to this as a reality that a year from now we're going to be like, oh, yeah, I saw where
Microsoft,
it changed.
A Microsoft renaissance?
Yes. What do you think?
I think we're hearing a whole lot of whispers, and I really want to hear something that is louder before I get excited. I think that Microsoft has done some cool things with Windows over this year, but they've also been really kind of laser-focused on Windows, and to deviate from that right now seems like a really weird strategy for them. Not necessarily a bad strategy, just a weird one. So, you know, I am really hesitant to be even a little optimistic about it until something louder than a whisper happens.
Mm-hmm. Would you pick a $59 Android tablet over a Windows tablet at this point? But
no,
if they're spec for spec
identical.
If they're spec for spec identical. Just because you can do more.
I would probably end up going with a Windows tablet
over an Android tablet. This is crazy that here we have at least two of us that are Android fan people that are like, oh, at that price point, it's a little more universal. I'd pick that.
Yeah. So little of my life is in the Windows world that I probably would go Android.
Me too. That's where I fall too. Like, I'm so out of it in terms of the Microsoft.
Like, I'd be starting from square one with Windows as far as that's concerned. So we're 50-50 on this panel.
Well, there you go.
As a caveat, I would get the Windows tablet and install Chrome and run Chrome as a Metro app.
Yes,
which is almost identical to a Chromebook.
Exactly.
The Chrome Metro app. So that would be like heaven. And I've said for a while now that I've wanted a Chrome tablet. And so that would be basically how that got used for me.
No for sure. No yeah, kidding. Yeah.
Interesting.
But basically think about it is if you turn that thing into like dock it basically into a desktop device, you now it has more uses is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, totally.
That's the only reason. But you lose
your Android ecosystem.
Right, exactly.
Stuff.
In an ideal world, like Asus is doing this where they have a tablet that's Android. And when you dock it to the keyboard, it turns into a Windows device.
Wait a minute, we've seen this before.
We've heard of this before. A wacky button.
That would be the holy grail because the Metro apps are meh. As Russell just said, I would run Chrome on that thing before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But hey.
All right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I definitely think we should keep an eye on it. And the Samsung development just magnifies that. I mean, I think
it really does.
I think Russell, that's your bullhorn versus a whisper. I mean, like if they make that move.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That.
Yep.
So
we'll see.
And it seems that everyone's talking about it. So it's one of those things where is this just going to happen? Like, we'll probably find out at Mobile World Congress, but like,
we don't have to wait very long. World Congress is next week, right?
It's
the week after next.
Okay. March 1st is the Samsung GS6 launch, presumably. I mean, you know, that's when the invites are. So.
All right. Well, there you go. Start the countdown.
We were talking about earlier about Xiaomi.
Yes. So, you know, Xiaomi had a little event for the media in the U.S.
In the U.S.?
I know. Oh, my God.
What? Are they bringing their phones to the U.S.? Finally?
No.
Oh.
Wow,
boy, they sure
aren't.
Not at all.
They really aren't.
So here's what's going on. You know, Hugo Barra used to work at Google. So obviously he probably has his eyes set on eventually getting the U.S. market rolling. But I think this was kind of a tease. Let me read you the little thing. And first, I have to bring it up. Hello. So, finally, Xiaomi family coming to the U.S. with hardware? Nope. No phones. At a press conference today in San Francisco, Global VP Hugo Barra, as I mentioned, announced that it will be launching Mi.com, Mi.com, in the U.S. To sell its other hardware, the Mi Band, power bank, headphones, etc., but no phones yet. Bear confirmed that there is too much red tape to come in the U.S. I guess FCC is red tape because I don't see what else they would need.
Well,
maybe it's a Chinese company, government of the U.S.
I think it's that. I think tape. It's okay. Wow, those phones look almost identical in some ways to iPhones.
Right. There's that. That's a very good point.
900,000 patents that they are.
That is a good point. I keep forgetting. Right, to me, that's not a big deal. I'm like, whatever. They look like iPhones, so what? but yeah, Apple would not be happy. And anyway, so it's not even a roadmap for them. They're just basically, I think they were just trying to rub the journalists the right way and say, we love you, pet.
Someday,
come and
maybe
see our nice toys. You probably never seen them in person before. Yeah.
You keep hearing about this company called Xiaomi. Here we are.
They're gonna have some serious issues if they want to bring these phones unmodified. And if they modify them, I could see Apple saying, oh, well, now that you have a legal presence in the U.S., I'm going to nail you for every infraction of patent you've done on phones that, even though you don't sell them in U.S., are still, you know, not right.
This reminds me of Ron Amadio's review of the Mi 4, which was, when I read that review, that's, I think, when we called out on the show, like, we got to get a Mi. And then, of course, a fan kind of came through on that, and we ended up reviewing the Mi on the show, the Mi 4. But what he said specifically about this is, the Mi hardware, Xiaomi's hardware, is so impressive, but it's so blatantly similar that they obviously have the means to make something really special. Why don't they just do that? Because then they just go in a different direction, take all those awesome resources that they have, and they can create a really high quality phone and just put a little bit more originality into it. And of course, I'm speaking for Ron at this point. This is what I pulled from his article. So maybe he said a few things. It's been a few months since I read it, but this is what I walked away from it from. Take those resources, make something a little bit more original, and then what's the barrier to coming to the U.S. and selling a kick-ass phone for a low price, hopefully? I mean, it would be hard to deny that because their devices, the build quality is great. Yeah. They do a lot right with it.
I mean, we know what they have to do. I think the reason they haven't is part of it is, you know, compliance. But the other thing I think is just that, you know, their entire reason of being is based on copying Apple. I mean, there's no doubt about it to me. And and in China, that rolls, that goes, because Apple is, you know, what you want to aim for in terms of, you know, people buy Apple just and pay those crazy prices over there for Apple products just because they want to have that image thing, right? So Xiaomi's like, well, we can give you the image minus for half the price. Go nuts. And that works. But I think when your entire business model is based on that, I don't know how you bring it to another country where that stuff is going to be legally...
Slowly.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly
what Hugo is saying here. Not on our roadmap yet.
Legally but I bet you suspect.
It's in their minds. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Well, what's in our minds is our awesomeness.
Our eyes' minds. Does that work?
Well, so we talked about it last week after it was hinted.
Our minds
and
are.
Very rarely am I waiting with bated breath on the reload button when a event happens or an announcement happens. But last week, there I was, hitting refresh, waiting for the announcement of what Google and Mattel were doing as they had now come together to bring back the ViewMaster exactly as we predicted in a new plastic shell that sells for $29.99 that runs Google Cardboard. How cool is this? Bringing VR to the masses and to a younger audience in a neat and kind of inventive but also retro way. Mattel and Google will team up to create this device, which is basically just a plastic shell that you put a phone into. It runs a version of Google Cardboard, and then it allows you to experience the ViewMaster in a different kind of interface that plays off of the ViewMaster's history of allowing to take you to different places, but also with the Google Cardboard VR ability. So like I mentioned, the device sells for $29.99. It requires you have a phone to put in it. Without the phone, it's just a plastic shell with some lenses.
What are the phones that are supported?
That's a good question. I didn't find that, actually.
It looked to me as if it looked like basically any Android phone that can run Cardboard.
It's got to fit inside the housing, so I wonder what the upper limit of that is.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting, though.
Yeah, it's neat.
It's cool.
And I love the little discs. Yeah.
But the cards don't...
So you used it with the ViewMaster. You put the reel in the ViewMaster, and that actually had the images, and you pulled the thing, and that moved the image around. Now they're keeping the idea of the reels, but now they are NFC tappable. you tap the device to the reel, and that loads up the experience, which is neat. It keeps the memory of it.
Reel for, does it use AR to, like, you know, superimpose to the reel, or is it just pure
Not
AR?
All of them, but yeah, they will also be AR triggers for a couple of them as well.
Okay, I thought so.
You take them.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
For the price, you can't go wrong. Right?
Yeah. And so, yeah, so the device, the plastic shell itself is $29.99, and additional reels are going to be sold for $14.99, and they're going to have nature and adventure destinations and science, et cetera. This, I can't wait to buy this for my nieces. Like, my 11-year-old niece has a Moto G.
Okay,
she has
there you
her
go.
Own
that was
phone.
My next question.
Yeah, like, boom. Like you know, she can yeah. share with her little sister. Like, this is exact. Like, I cannot wait to give this to them. So I'm very excited for this. So good job. And I posted about it on Google Plus. That's how excited I was, which you know I rarely
wow.
do.
Wow,
right?
You went to Google Plus with it, Ron. That means something.
I didn't go – well, I did to Twitter as well, too. I did the, oh, okay. I did the cross post thing. There you go. But very excited for it. So good job, Google and Mattel. I like it.
Craziness.
You've never been on the edge of your seat for a Mattel announcement.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
since you were a kid, anyway. Even when you were a kid, you didn't know that there was an announcement.
It was called the Sears catalog. That's right. What it was called.
Exactly. You were on the edge of your mailbox waiting for the Sears catalog. All right, before we get to the arena, hold on. Let's thank a sponsor. Today's episode brought to you by HipChat. How is your team communicating? Are they using a variety of email, IM, texting, cloud storage, different document sharing apps? HipChat puts everything in one place, and it's designed specifically for business. HipChat is IM, it's video chat, it's document sharing, screen sharing, system updates, code sharing. It's integrated in one simple platform. You know, email is slow. Meetings get sidetracked. Regular IM doesn't work well for groups, especially large groups. As is usually the case in business, HipChat keeps your team in sync, and it works from any device, no matter where you are. The best part, HipChat integrates with the top developer tools. Its integrations are super powerful. GitHub, Jira, Zendesk, and more. You can check out the 57 services that HipChat plays nice with. HipChat brings your entire project and team communications together. It's easy to set up. It's fun to use. It makes your team super productive. And, you know, we use it. We use HipChat here at Twit. We have our ads teams working on HipChat daily. So, I mean, we put this into use, and it's just a really nice kind of cohesive way to keep all of our communication connected through its service. We use it all the time. Get your team on the same page in seconds. You can try it out for yourself. There's a freemium version that you can use free forever. But for the next 30 days, you'll get the full version of HipChat, which includes the bonus features of video and screen sharing. You can try HipChat free, no credit card required. Just visit hipchat.com/allaboutandroid. You sign up, click on Start Chatting, then invite a few team members and try it free for 30 days. And for the first 100 signups, HipChat is going to extend their 30-day free offer here to 90 days. Remember, that's hipchat.com/allaboutandroid. You can check it out for yourself. HipChat, your team, your project in sync instantly. Check it out for yourself. hipchat.com/allaboutandroid. Thanks so much for your support. All right. We have an updated Android Arena theme. Let's see if you can pick out what was changed.
So many enter, but only one lives. Arena.
Ooh. The eagle eye would spot that that's the new, the current modern font type of the word Android.
Man, that Jeff Kosmicki is the attention to detail impresses every day.
Well done,
if Jeff.
Jeff
were here, I would commend him for the work that he does.
Ron is somewhat suspicious that I might, in fact, be Jeff Kosmicki. I can tell you without a doubt I'm just useless with motion graphics like that.
It's the ray gun connection.
That's
a very specific word.
All right. So Jeff Kosmicki has done all of the bumpers on this show. He does it for free, and he sends us updates like last weekend when he said, hey, I went through your apps drop and, you know, swapped out the icons
so
they're refreshed.
We haven't shown that on the show. Can we show that?
Sure. Do you have it there? If it's already loaded, we could certainly.
So we've
do
got
that.
Updated apps here. Uh-huh. I see Google Fit. You see there?
Uh-huh. There's Fit. There's
slow-mo.
Where?
Yeah, there you go. There's To Do still
new
there.
Music.
That's good. There
yeah, To Do. I don't think To Do's going anywhere. We got a new Keep. You see.
Yeah.
He just was like, you know, I'll update these for
bored.
You.
No big deal. Jeff's great.
And then he also swapped out the Android Arena. But anyways, if you want to find out
if you can hire Jeff for your own visual needs, go to toyraygun.net. And yeah, he's awesome.
And he's not you.
And he's not me.
Although they've never been in the same
Believe
place
me,
at the
I
same
don't have time to do
yeah,
this
we
stuff. I'm just saying.
I'm not convinced.
Okay, well. Or hire me for your next visual arts.
And then we'll see what happens. No, Jeff's awesome.
I should really tell Leo and Lisa that I'm doing this on the side.
You get twice the pay.
Yes, I should just do all of our art. Okay, last week we had a couple of apps in the arena. We had S-Converter, Flush, and Sue, the social and payment network. Turns out a lot of people need to find a toilet. 53% of people.
I'm wondering the metaphorical value of the fact that the 200th episode arena winner is an app that lets you find a toilet.
That is an interesting coincidence.
Philosophical.
And I also just...
It's either a statement or we just didn't bring our A game.
Condemnation.
Might have been. Hey, Flush is a very nicely designed app.
A lot of people were very, very happy.
Maybe they laughed so hard that they were pissing their pants. Yeah, they had to find a bathroom.
That could be the case.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks.
Thank you. Well done.
Nice.
Well, that just keeps going.
Okay.
That goes for a while.
This arena went down the toilet.
All right, cool. Well, I won. That was my first win of the year, I think, by the way. I don't know if I missed the chat room with the stats, but I think that was my first win.
I'm sure we'll see it. I'm sure
I think you have two wins, guests have two wins, and that's my first win. So there you go.
Arena through week six. Me with two, you with one, guests with three. Guests are firmly winning.
The guest is in the lead
at this point.
Russell, no pressure.
Somebody's keeping track.
No pressure.
It's nice.
We're gonna
I
have
don't
to
think
add.
I've ever won any of these, so I'm good.
You could win today.
Today could be the day, man.
I've never won either, don't worry.
It's not easy.
It's not easy.
Up with four new apps each week. Okay, mine is really quick and really very simple. Let me see here. It's called Speakerphone X. So here's the scenario. You dial somebody on your phone and you're talking, with it like normal. And then you actually want to go to speaker mode, so you pull it away and then you're like, where's the thing? And,
so
whatever.
Annoying.
Speakerphone actually does this automatically. So what it does is it uses the proximity sensor on your phone and it automatically switches between in-ear audio and speakerphone audio. And
wow.
I'm going to see if I can do this without revealing too much here. I'm pulling away for a second. I'm going to go to my voicemail. Okay, so here goes my voicemail.
Wow, you still use voicemail?
Oh, that's cool.
Wow.
And it's like instant, right?
Like you win right now.
Boom. So it's pretty straightforward.
Why
we'll go in here.
Why does that exist as a setting in every freaking phone ever made?
It's
pretty
awesome.
It probably should, yeah.
Somebody used to patent this crap.
Yeah.
Well, Speakerphone X developer might be on that. I don't know.
Sell it to Samsung. Make a million.
So that's one of the features here. It's Speakerphone, and you can have it, turn on or off. You can really get in there, like stop when, You
can
manually stop it.
Can you set a delay, like 5-second delay, for example, or something between
the transition?
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So, if you pull it off your ear a little bit, it doesn't go immediately.
Oh, so it doesn't get all glitchy or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
That's a really good question. I don't know if you have that delay right now.
Yes.
That's a good addition, though, because I could see that. I haven't had any issues with that, but there you go. Auto hang up. Features. There's a little alert, which I don't know.
You still win.
That's a good one.
You still win.
Auto answer. So auto answer, if your phone's ringing, it detects when you put it up to your ear and then it answers. So you don't have to
LG has that on some phones.
To answer. So anyways, really quick, it's called Speakerphone X, Speakerphone EX, and it's free in the Play Store. And it's just, kind of changes how your phone works.
Strong out of the gate, Jason.
Boom.
Well done.
I thought it was kind of cool.
All right.
So, Miriam,
I got another camera app because me and camera apps. I'm still trying to find the ultimate. So, if you can get the camera on,
you are a camera phone fan.
I'm kind of can
a phone
I? Oh,
camera
there we go.
Fan.
Perfect. So, last time I give you guys Camera FV5 right here, which is a really awesome app, especially if you're running a phone that supports RAW and the APIs for Lollipop and stuff. But if you are, and a lot of us have these camera phones that are Android, but for some reason, I'm speaking about you, LG, particularly on the G3 right now, some reason they refuse to have the settings for ISO or the settings for simple things like, exposure compensation. You know, you want to tweak things a little bit, but we don't want something too... Well, anyway, here it is, ProCapture. There's a free version if you want to try it out. It's $3.99 if you want to buy it. Let me pull out the M&Ms because the M&Ms have kind of become our reference. So here's what I like about this. It's, as you can see, a very basic camera UI. You have things like exposure compensation. You have things like white balance, a bunch more settings. But what I really like about it is that you can use the camera button here as a dual detent button, basically. And I'll show you how that works. Samsung and LG used to implement this on their UIs, but have gotten rid of it. And what it is if you tap, as you can see, it's focused on the M&Ms. And now I can reframe with that focus and that exposure setting.
Oh, that's cool.
And until I decide to release my finger, then it takes the shot. So that is one of the things I love about this app.
Mm-hmm.
Just that camera button implementation. And then here's the result. As you can see, that's not the one. My Mac super overexposed exactly the way I wanted it, but the M&Ms are super well exposed and in focus. So that's it, really. There's really not much going on here. You get a whole bunch of other settings, you know, like what you'd expect from a modern app that's a camera app. And the nice thing about this is it doesn't require any special APIs or settings to use. So it's just, you know, any camera, any phone that has Android on it, pretty much, even like Gingerbread, it'll run. And all of a sudden, you get some settings like ISO and like brightness, and then this great camera button. So I don't know if that's worth $3.99 to y'all, but for some of you, it might be. It might be. So there you go.
Cool. I think of all app, like all app categories have a different value because of how much you use them. And cameras, I would imagine a lot of people use them so frequently that absolutely a good camera app that works for how you think and how you want to use it. $3.99 is absolutely not too much.
And just those controls, like for whatever reason, like their attempt to make the default camera app simpler, but then burying things like whatever the plus minus. I'm not a camera person, but you know, being able to change
the exposure
level, like that's hit. Like you need to unlock that now.
Yeah,
like that's default is hidden, and I need that at clubs and stuff like that.
And that's the thing that's killing me on some of the really good phones, like the G3, which has great camera hardware. There's no setting for it.
Yeah.
At all. You're like, whoa. Yep.
Why don't you put that in there?
Anyway.
Cool. That is ProCapture. It's $3.99 in the Play Store. Russell, I have your app installed. You're going to win this week. I feel it.
So I'm a huge fan of second screen apps. I love having my phone or my tablet with me when I'm watching a show. I dig the extra information. I'm kind of the... like bonus features at the end of the DVD kind of guy. And so being able to do that with television was a really cool thing. I think the very best app right now that does that is Sci-Fi Sync. The Sci-Fi Channels app does it for a whole bunch of different shows. It uses the microphone to listen to the show that you're watching and will live sync extra data based on what point in the show you are at. So, you know, when a big plot point happens, then you'll get, you know, either a poll or, you know, the ability to chat or background for, you know, the composition of that scene and just some really cool stuff that happens for, you know, behind the scenes stuff. But for the two Sharknado movies and their new TV show, 12 Monkeys, you can also sync to Philips Hue lights, which is a big deal for me.
No way.
I have Philips Hue lights in my living room. So like there's a scene, the very first scene in 12 Monkeys, like you see the main character and then the whole screen goes red and you see the 12 Monkeys logo. All the lights in my room go red to match. Wow. And then the entire rest of the show is live synced with no effort for me. Just by having the app on my phone, the show syncs the lights to whatever's happening in the show. And it's such an incredible experience. I love
way
it.
Way cool.
I
awesome.
Have a time lapse of it on Android Central. It's really just fantastic to see.
Oh, man. I'll have to pull that up, see if I can do two things at once. Central. Sci-fi. Sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once here because I want to see that. Is it the app pick of the month of the week?
No, it was a second screen article. I'll see if I can find it real quick, and maybe I can put it in chat. It should only take me a second. But yeah, so it's you know, it's something so where cool. If you have a Philips Hue setup, then you know the app is free. If you want the light setup, then obviously you have to have Philips Hue setup, and that can be a little on the expensive side. But
this is a reason to do that. I mean, like that's
right.
Like,
yeah.
That's so cool.
But I mean, like for the rest of the live sync stuff, then it's free audio sync. And because it's using audio sync, you don't have to be watching the show live. I put the link in chat. You don't have to be watching the show live. You can be watching it DVR'd. You can be watching it Chromecasted from an app. And the microphone will do the heavy lifting for you anyway. It's really cool.
I mean, the second screen stuff, like I didn't play with it that much. And I was watching a movie that I rented off of Google Play. And I had my tablet in my just to the right of me because I was Chromecasting it. And I looked down and I saw that they were showing the album cover of the music that was playing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa. And it was like it was in the last scene of the movie. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. But uh-huh. I already finished watching the movie. So now I want to get more into that stuff because generally second screen stuff kind of annoys me because I want to watch what I'm doing. But like this kind of stuff, that's what it should do. It give you contextual information at the right time that doesn't take away from the experience. And having the light change to match it is just super cool.
That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's and what you see in that time lapse there is, you know, it's the first 40 minutes of the show where the lights are just constantly changing to, you know, shades of purple and shades of red, you know, even like super bright white. And, you know, watching a show like that at night is just fantastic. It's so much fun to have that experience. I wish it was available for more stuff.
I was just going to say, like, that's a reason to buy the Philips Hue, but also I don't watch sci-fi, so maybe it's a reason to start watching sci-fi,
too. Yeah, I mean, so before they did the 12 Monkeys thing, the only thing it worked for were the Sharknado movies, and so I was like, well, you know, then I'd have to watch the Sharknado movies, but,
that's great.
You know, it is definitely a cool experience, and I definitely applaud sci-fi for putting the amount of work that they have into this app, because it is a ton of work.
And what a unique thing to apply that work into. But
really cool.
I'm sure it's the kind of thing where once you experience it like that, you want everything to do that with your Philips Hue. I've watched a few things through, I think it's Play Movies.
Yeah.
And then when I pull up my app to do something, it was like this person's on the scene right now. Yeah. And then, you know, the pictures of the people are swooping around. Like, yes, I need to know what that guy's doing now. Tell me, what is he starring in now?
Well, I like seeing, like, what album the song is from. Because, like, I like that song. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff that's pretty cool. So, yeah.
All right, go for it, Ron. What you got?
So I'm following up Flush with an app called – it's a free app in the Google Play Store. It's one of many, but so far it's the best one I found that does what it does. It's called Instagrab for Instagram Save. That's because it's made by somebody in Hong Kong. But basically what it is it's simply an app for you to pull down images off of Instagram.
Wow.
It's a hard thing to do.
So, well, to save them locally, yes. Because you can't do it within the app. Quite often you would either need to go to the web and do right-click Save As – or on the phone, really, you can do a screenshot, but then you get the whole app bezel and stuff like this. Now, here I am. I've logged into Instagram via in this own app, so you can see there's my little icon. I'm going to go to my feed, and this is my latest, you know, kind of these are photos of my friends and things like this. And so, you know, I'm going to scroll down. I'm looking, and for whatever reason, like my friend Ryan was at a toy fair today, and that's a cool three-headed dragon. So I'm going to click tap download.
You need that. I need that on your device.
And it's
going
to say it's been added to the download list. Smart download completed. And so now if I go into my pictures gallery here, where is that? Photos.
There, yeah.
You will see there's the photo from Instagram that I downloaded. So now I've got it. So if I want to repost it, I can repost it. If I want to save it, I can save it. I can put it with my own photos. I can save it somewhere else. It's I don't know if this is legal. Or like how that works with Instagram's TOS. But it just makes it ridiculously easy to download photos off Instagram. That's all it does. So what you can do is you can either go to your feed, which is your feed of on Instagram, or you can go to any photos that you've liked. So I can see these are all the photos I've liked. And if I want to, this is my friend Josh's barbecue in the snow, I can just suck that right down. And if for some reason you want to get one of your photos, let's say you posted it, but you want the original. This is all the photos I've posted. This is my feed. If you went to me on Instagram, and let's say I really needed this picture of the wedding present, I can just download it, and there it is.
I think you need that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
although you probably, you know,
I probably already have it because I uploaded it, but still. But there they all are. So nice.
And it saves them at native res, like 600x600 or whatever.
It saves it whatever. Yeah, but whatever's been up, it's saving the highest res that Instagram is saving.
I think it's
it at.
Six by six.
So yeah.
Nice.
So there you go. So Instagram for Instagram save.
Save.
Yep. Save. I love that.
There you go.
Save.
Essential.
It's like first.
That was essential. Yeah. Because Instagram for Instagram was taken. So we might as well add save
thank
to
you.
The end of it.
640 by 640. Woohoo. Yeah.
Same. All right.
Cool.
Well, cool. Excellent stuff. So we have Speakphone X. Oh, I'm going to stall because I didn't do the publish
thing.
Oh,
wait. Thing. Do you have a note on yours or?
Oh, you're right. I do. Thanks. And that'll buy me time because I got to publish this. So my app, which is the Speakphone X, I didn't realize there's a paid version, and that's why it was grayed out on here. It just did not click. $1.50 is the paid version. You get all of those settings that I was showing off, which I was wondering like why I couldn't click them, and rookie mistake. but anyway, so it's $1.50 for the full version. But to do what I was showing off the up to the year, you know, down and it switches to speakerphone and everything, that's included. That's free. Okay, so if you go to AAAPoll.com/201, should work now.
There it is.
Excellent. You can vote for your favorite this week. Speakerphone X, Instagram for Instagram for Instagram save. There we go. It's kind of a mouthful. Pro Capture or Siphy or Sci-Fi Sync, depending on how you want to say that.
Siphy
I always want to say Siphy, but I don't know if that's what they intend. AAAPoll.com/201 to place your vote. Let your voice be heard and let us know which is your favorite app of this week. That is it, folks.
Cool.
We rounded it out with a strong arena and yeah. Good I think stuff. We've talked about all the things that need to be talked about. Russell, Holly, always love getting you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on, and congratulations once again with the new position at Android Central. What are you working on right now?
Android Central has got me pretty busy right now, I haven't done anything outside of that. But I do have a really neat sci-fi book that I think people should check out still.
Yes, you should. So where can people find that?
It's Google Play Store, Amazon, iTunes, everywhere. It's called The Space Monster Anti-Survival Guide.
Cool. Nice.
I love it. And have you been getting a lot of feedback from folks? I know you had.
It's been really fun so far. This was my first time writing like a creative story, and I've gotten a lot of pretty good responses, the first of which being that it was entirely too short.
that's good.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one to get,
All right. So there it is.
It was definitely a fun story, and there were some amazing illustrations in there by a guy named Aaron Wood, who did a fantastic job with all of my crazy space monsters. So cool. If you're looking for something fun, it is $3, and I think you should read it. But I'm a little biased.
I think you should, too.
It's
I think
$3. Like, it's like, just buy it, guys. Everybody just buy it.
When is the audiobook coming?
I've had a couple people legitimately ask me for an audiobook, and I don't think I can do it. Like, I might try it. The format for the book is really weird. Like, I'd have to do a bunch of different voices.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what you need to do, Russell? You need to get Michael Fisher at Pocket Now or Sean Hollister at Gizmodo to read it because they have amazing radio voice.
Sean Hollister, yes.
Yeah. Or you could get Leo to read it, perhaps. Yeah. You can bribe Leo. But you need a good radio voice, and those three are would be my recommendation. I just email them and ask them if it's not that long. They might be able to just whip it
knock it out in an afternoon.
Exactly. Yeah.
Obviously, Leo's a fan of my hair, so maybe I
can. Yeah, there you go.
I think that was basically Leo's way of saying, "Do you happen to have a book that I could read the audiobook?"
That exchange was earlier. That's the Leo face stroke of Inquisition
of audio. Yes, exactly. That's how he does it. That's how he rolls.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Russell. Really appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Miriam, what you got work? What are you working on these days?
I'm pretty busy, actually. I'm getting ready for Mobile Congress on one hand, so I'm going to be covering it with Mobile Geeks, which is a blog out of Taiwan that's best known for a lot of video content. So they do a lot of hands-ons and reviews that are video reviews, and they do a lot of on-stage live streaming of interviews and stuff like that at events. Nice. They always work something out. So Intel's given us some space in their booth at Mobile Congress to set up a stage to live stream interviews for 8 hours a day. And so that's what I'm helping with, in addition to, you know, the going to the Samsung event and the HTC event. So I'm going to try to, like, cut some small videos as I go and, as I said, package them up into something you can put on the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Whether I'll get to it and get to see everything before the deadline, which is Tuesday for this week, 2 weeks from now for this show. I don't know, but I'll try.
Okay, whatever you can do. That's awesome.
So that's what I'm getting ready for. I'm also going to a wedding this weekend, so... you know, bunch of stuff in Vancouver in Canada. So, bunch of stuff going on, but, you know, things are good. Stay tuned tomorrow morning for an exciting Before You Buy episode. And that's basically what I've been up to. A bunch more reviews, obviously, on my plate. I'm so behind on my reviews right now. I got like 8 reviews to edit and put up on my YouTube.
They keep stacking.
I got the raw content, but I need to actually like make them happen. So
you are too busy.
I'm just too busy, basically.
You can find Miriam's reviews at tankgirl.com, T-N-K-G-R-L. Yeah,
tankgirl.com. Try to post most of them before I go out to Barcelona. And then, I'm Tankgirl on Twitter, T-N-K-G-R-L. Follow me there.
Radical. Miriam, thank you so much. You'll be back next week. We also have Florence Ion returning, possibly in studio from Greenbot. So, should be a good show.
That'll be fun.
Ron, what about you?
Usual. You can find me at about.me/RonXO, where you can find my Instagram and you can use my app to download them. And I know there are other apps that do that, but this is the app I reviewed. Just the chat room is barking. I'm aware. But anyway, go to about.me/RonXO. You find Google+, Instagram, Twitter, all that fun stuff. Go to RonXO.thinkup.com. You can see all the insights related to my social media presence, thanks to our former host, Gina Trapani.
That's right.
So there you go. You can see, Jay Flanagan is RonXO's Twitter. He's actually one of my best friends in real life, too. So look at that. Social media brings us together.
Smart.
And finally, by day, I'm sitting behind a desk over at Image Comics headquarters. And you can check it out at imagecomics.com, where we've got some of the best comic books in the world. So check it out. They're all available digitally on Comixology or on Google Play. So if you dig The Walking Dead or Saga or Sex Criminals or Black Science and all the great comics, check them all out. I highly recommend them. So.
Right on. All right, Brian, over to you.
Huh? What? Oh.
Oh, sorry. Are you playing?
He's playing.
Oh, I should shut that up. Oh, he was.
Hey, we totally caught you.
Oh, no, busted. you can follow me at Twitter, cranky_hippo. I do some fun stuff with Padre every Thursday, doing know-how. And more recently, since Padre's been gone and we pre-recorded know-how, I did a 3DS review on BYB earlier today, so you can check that out.
That was good, yeah.
Having a lot of fun with that, but definitely a time waster. So
a little too much fun during All About Android, I might say.
Yeah, so that's why the news.
You got the TriCaster on autopilot
today.
Monster Hunter is serious business, guys. I don't think you understand.
Yeah. You're right. I don't understand.
Dedicate yourself.
You don't want to put the TriCaster on cruise control too much, because then everyone will realize that the TriCaster could just switch the show for you. So I just be careful. That's all.
Yeah,
I'm
we got to keep that on the down low. There's this button right over here. It automates everything.
Autopilot.
We don't tell many people, except for right now, we tell everybody.
But they'll keep it quiet.
So you guys will keep our secret, right? Yeah. You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell. Follow my musical exploits, yellowgoldmusic.com. Check out my other Android show at twit.tv/arena. This week I'm covering apps, one of which was on the show, and I think maybe you brought it, Off Time, was it?
Yes, it was Off Time, yes.
Yes, this entire episode is about keeping, put the phone down, basically. Yep. So it's all apps that help you to put your phone away.
Yeah.
So anyways.
Disconnect without disconnecting.
Yes, yes. Just walk, step away from the technology. Put your hands up and step away from the technology. So that's twit.tv/arena. A new episode appears there tomorrow. But as for this show, that is it, and we will be back next week. Would love to hear from you. 347-SHOW-AAA is our voicemail. We have AAA@twit.tv is our email. We're on Twitter. We're at Android Show. We're on Google+. We have an awesome community there. Tons of community engagement and people talking about Android and about the show. So check it out. Just search for All About Android. We also have a subreddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. Post your stories there. Appreciate it. And, show notes, past episodes, everything you need about the show is posted at twit.tv/AAA. You can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.